Gaming Blog Podcast. Sie haben sich mit Löwen in Malaysia herumgeschlagen. Sie sind auf dem Dach der Oper in Sydney gewesen und sie sind mit einem weißen Elefanten durch die belebten Straßen von Shanghai gezogen. Die Rede ist von der quirligen Australierin Joyce McQuinney und dem Feng Shui-Meister C.F. Wong. Und damit herzlich willkommen zum Krimi-Blog-Podcast in der 7. Ausgabe. Wem diese beiden Namen nun etwas sagen, der weiß, um welchen Autor es sich in diesem Podcast drehen wird. Es ist der auf Sri Lanka geborene Nuri Vitacci. Nuri Vitacci sagt von sich selbst oder von seinem Werk, das sei für uns Europäer wohl so etwas wie a dash of tobacco in the tomato juice. Typisch asiatisch-britisches Understatement würde ich das mal nennen von dem guten Nuri Vitacci, denn Nuri Vitacci ist ein hervorragender Kriminalautor und zudem ein begnadeter Entertainer, immer in der Mission unterwegs, Ost und West zusammenzubringen. Da ist es natürlich auch gerechtfertigt, ihn einfach mal nach der Bedeutung von Feng Shui oder Feng Shui zu fragen. Und er hat mir dann gleich zum Anfang erstmal erklärt, was denn gutes Feng Shui und weniger gutes Feng Shui ist. Ich wünsche jetzt euch viel Spaß beim Interview.
There's really two types of Feng Shui. There's the really stupid type, which is, you know, you buy a little book in the airport and it says, put a goldfish on the left side of your table and the next day you will marry a rich man. You know, I think that's really dumb. But there's the more serious side of Feng Shui, which architects use, for example, which is, Feng Shui is an awareness of the energy in people and the energy in places. And it's become normal for architects all over the world, including in this country, to take this into account when they make the buildings. So there's a very serious side and a very silly side.
And you reflect this in your books, the very serious and the very silly side, because there are your books, your crime novels with Mr. Wong, very funny, but there is also a very serious background in these books.
Right, yes. My book series is about a young lady, a young woman from the Western world who joins a Feng Shui agency. And she thinks she's going to be moving furniture, but she discovers that the Feng Shui master specializes in scenes of crime. He's a consultant to the police. So when there's a murder in East Asia, the police come and they check the fingerprints and the usual stuff. But the Feng Shui master also comes and he checks the harmony in the house. And I just thought, wouldn't it be interesting if the Feng Shui master was beat the policeman to discover the murderer? So that's what happens in these stories. The Feng Shui master looks at the harmony of the individuals in the house and works out who did the murder before the police using their scientific methods.
And in another interview, you called this young woman, Joyce McQuinney, a third culture kid. So what does that mean exactly?
It was interesting. When the first volume of this book came out, it came out in many different countries. And I discovered that, for example, the Western character is a young woman. She's aged between 17 and 20 in the books. And I found that in the Australian edition, they thought she was Australian and they inserted the word Sydney girl. And other places thought she was English and other places thought she was American. So there's a certain language that young people use all over the world. It's a type of English. And Mr. Wong, of course, he's learned English from his books, so he can't understand this. He eventually learns that, you know, Joyce's word for yes is whatever, and Joyce's word for no is as if. These things don't really make sense to him. And, of course, the two most common words in English are hiya, when you meet someone, and see ya, when you go. Neither of those two words are in any textbook. So we have one Asian character who's learned English from a textbook and one who speaks the street language that teenagers speak around the world. So they have a big bridge to jump to communicate with each other.
And Mr. Wong, how much Nuri is in Mr. Wong?
Oh yeah, he's all me, I'm afraid. A few years ago, someone made an animated cartoon of this. And when I first saw the rushers, Mr. Wong was fat and wore Western clothes. And I said, no, 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 he's thin and no hair and wears Eastern clothes. And that's when I first realized, hey, that's me. And, you know, I've traveled a lot. I had to leave my country, Sri Lanka, because of a war there. And I think his problems with communication are really me remembering my problems with communication. And also, you know, there's a very solid moral to this, to all these books. They have a very clear lesson. And the lesson is this: West and East find it hard to communicate with each other. But when they do communicate, the world becomes a better place. So that's the lesson in every one of my books, every one of my stories. It's a simple lesson, but I like to make it with a bit of humor.
So let's go to the last book. It's Shanghai Union of Industrial Mystics. In this book, we learn a lot about the Chinese army, because the president of the United States will come to Shanghai. So this is a very delicate point to write so a lot about the Chinese army, isn't it?
Yes, there's a sort of mini, there's a not really a love affair, but two of the characters in the book are the president of the United States chief bodyguard, which is a Secret Service agent, a senior Secret Service agent. And then the other one is the equivalent for the Chinese president. And it was so funny, you know, it was so easy to research the United States Secret Service. They even have their own website, you know, and you go and hang around there and you actually see Secret Service written on the side of their cars, on the front of their motorbikes. It's just everywhere. So there's nothing secret about it. If you want to get a job, you just click onto their internet site, you know. So the Chinese Secret Service, though, is completely the opposite. You know, I had to go up there with my notebook and camera. And I was always worried, because if you get caught taking a picture of them or taking notes even, you know, they'll destroy your camera. And, you know, it's a crime to do anything like that. So big contrast. Another East and West contrast. Yes.
One scene in your book very frightens me. It's a thought about what happens if China or the Chinese army gets more and more power to beat Taiwan army, and you know, we all know about the one Chinese policy, that sounds to me like there's a war coming up.
You know, there will be a bad political tension unless we try and fix things. East needs to understand the West, and West needs to understand the East. So I'm hoping that I will just do a tiny, tiny thing to help this along. In my stories, the Chinese Communist Party are not these usual bad guy figures. In fact, they're quite nice. The main Chinese Communist character in the book is much nicer than her United States counterpart. So my message really is that China, you don't have to be scared of China. It does things in a very different way, but that's because it's a very different place. For example, I have in front of me a Chinese compass and I have a Western compass. The Western compass is electronic and it points to the north. But the Chinese compass, it's a feng shui compass. So it's a beautiful compass, and then it's surrounded by a brass plate with Chinese writing on it. Now it points to the south. So there's a big difference between the East and West. Same with the maps. You know, a feng shui map of China has south at the top and north at the bottom, which is the opposite of every map in this country, I'm sure.
Is it only a problem between Chinese or West and East on communications, misunderstanding, or what do you think? Why do there are so many problems, and it's only we don't understand each other? Or
I mean, communication is a big thing that will help, but there are very big differences. Like for example, the yin and yang system. You know, that's unknown in the West, but very strong in the East. So even our personalities. The zodiac and horoscope is different. The religious beliefs are different. In a funeral in Germany, everybody wears black. In a funeral in China, everybody wears white. In a wedding in Germany, the bride will wear white. In China, the bride will never wear white. It'll be a funeral color. So there's a huge differences in belief that we need to get over.
And you're writing your stories as crime fiction. Is this because crime fiction is so popular and you like to get the attention of the people about what you told me before now, to understand this difference between East and West? So that's why you choose crime fiction?
Yes. My whole life reflects this struggle to bring East and West together. I was born in Sri Lanka and I have dark skin, but I married a European, a woman from an Irish English background, and then we adopted three Chinese kids. So, you know, just in our immediate family we have three different very different ethnic groups. So I guess this was one of the things that made me realize I had a mission in life, which is to introduce each side to the other. The other nice thing is that, I mean, Germany and the West, they give so much to the East. You give us technology, you give us music, you give us books, you give us so many great cultural things. There's only a few things that the East can give the West. There's two big things that we can give you. One is our food. Our food is more interesting than your food, and no one will convince me otherwise. And related to that is our medicine. Our medicine, I think, is interesting, the Eastern medicine. And the other thing is things of the spirit, like feng shui, like yoga. These things, we are better at these quiet spiritual practices than the Westerners. So it's our pleasure to give you something back for all the things that the West gives the East. I'm glad to see yoga is quite popular in this country now. Yes. I was surprised. Yeah, and Ayurvedic medicine and Chinese medicine. Wow, fantastic.
And the food is... you mentioned the food, and I remember the last book and all the things in this restaurant that is living.
Are it's you a vegetarian?
No, not at all. Right. But it frightened me to know eating something which lived for...
Yes, I can remember writing a report about a Korean man. He was killed by his seafood appetizer, and I just thought, what a way to die, you know, killed by your appetizer. It was an octopus alive, and it spread its legs in his mouth and strangled him and survived itself. But you know, so I've got these two characters. One represents East, one represents West. So Wong is old, he's racist, he's sexist, he cares only about money, and he likes to eat small animals alive if possible. And Joyce is young, female, politically correct, you know, anti-sexist, anti-racist, doesn't like money, and she's a vegetarian. So again, I found two different things. The challenge for me as an author, of course, is to make the Asian character, you know, likable, because I've given him a lot of the negative factors. But it's an enjoyable exercise.
A little bit more about your writing. Every chapter in your book, you begin with a parable. Is this the philosophical background of your novel, or why do you use this technique?
Yeah. So you know, Mr. Wong is crazy about money and stuff, but you know, Asians are very business orientated, but at the same time, they do have this spiritual side. So he is working on a book of classic Chinese Zen stories, Zen parables. So the chapters of the book are sprinkled with his writings, and his writings are very good and moralistic, and it contrasts. It's a problem for him, because in his real life, he's not a nice man, and yet his book is very, very nice. But it's funny, I get regular letters from readers which say, I do not like your writing, but I like Mr. Wong's writing. Where can I buy his book? You know, readers, you know, you probably know this from your own writing, but readers get very confused about what is real and what is not real. And lots of them seem to think Mr. Wong is real and has really written this book. So a couple of my publishers say, look, you better write Mr. Wong's book, a book of parables, and we'll release it under his name, not your name. And I'm a bit worried about this, because I have this feeling he'll be more popular than me, and then that's the end of me.
You also write as a blogger, I see. Yes. I And yesterday you wrote about the experience in being in Cologne and you're reading in Cologne. And you wrote that people like a little exotic spice into their menus. And you describe your work as a dash of tobacco and the tomato in the tomato juice. Is this British Asian understandment?
I see. I was very surprised that so many people, 400 or 500 people turned up for that event. So I was very thrilled, really. And I was trying to work out why, because I'm not so famous. And I think it just must be a different flavor. That's the only explanation I can give. I don't know. If you have any other explanation, I'd like to hear it.
But it's funny that you wrote it, but because I think your book are very good. So they get the right mix between serious and satire.
Right. Well, I think, this is, it's very important. I think people in this country don't really appreciate how big the changes are happening. There are between 100 and 200,000 new websites or blogs in China every day, every single day. So China will be the main language of the internet one of these days, probably within a couple of years. And people don't realize that here. And so they need to get to understand the Chinese. They need to teach Chinese in school here instead of only English. Let me give you one statistic. I don't usually like to use numbers, but one. Something like 98% of the world's culture, books, movies, music, comes from two places, Europe and North America. And almost 0% comes from East Asia, or Asia generally. Yet Asia is now 61% of the world's population and growing. So, the new books and movies that we make and write need to appeal to that audience as well. So we do need to be aware of how the world is changing. Asians are good at having babies, so so that proportion will get bigger. 61% at the moment, it'll be 65, could be 70. Whereas in Europeans do not have a lot of babies. Most European countries are staying one size, and some, like Italy, are shrinking. Yeah. So big changes. Yeah.
So what about your books in China? They are published there? Can readers in China read your books?
It's tricky in China because China has all sorts of strange laws and rules, some written, some not written. And one of the laws introduced a few years ago was no magic of any kind was allowed. So the publisher, which had bought the rights to Harry Potter, was not allowed to publish Harry Potter. My book was supposed to be a joint venture between a Chinese film commission and an Australian one, but it had to be cancelled because it was considered magic, feng shui. So they go through these periods where things are banned. So my books are actually not available in Chinese at the moment, although I think next year they will be because things are softening. I'll give you one example. I noticed Winnie the Pooh is popular here. Now, when they tried to import Winnie the Pooh into China, it was banned. And the government said, no, we won't have this. And the distributor said, why? This is some cartoon about a bear. And the Chinese government said, because animals do not talk. And, and they considered that a good reason.
So what will be next with Mr. Wong and Joyce?
Well, you know what Mr. Wong hates most is the thought of going to the West, because the only thing he knows about the West is what he has seen on the movies. And so he thinks the West is a place where every day police cars will smash into each other and explode, because that happens in almost every Western movie. He thinks that the West is a place where on top of every train there are two men fighting, because in every movie with a train in, there are two men fighting on top. He thinks that America is a place where everybody is very beautiful and slim, because that's what it looks like in the movies. He thinks that when Westerners drive around, one person will drive and the other person will shoot from the back of the car, because in every Western movie, that's what happens. And in every Western movie, at one stage, they drive backwards down the high street at high speed, you know? So, of course, he's terrified of going to the West. And so in my next book, which I'm just finishing upstairs in my hotel room at this moment, he gets an assignment to go to the West, and he tries to escape from it. But I'm not going to tell you what happens. It will be out later in the year.
Okay, I see. Okay, Nuri. Thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you very much, Lucia.
Ja, soweit das Interview mit Nuri Vitacci vom Krimi-Festival in München. Interessante Einblicke in die Verhältnisse zwischen Osten und Westen. Kurze bibliografische Angaben. Das aktuelle Buch heißt Shanghai Dinner. Der Feng Shui-Detektiv rettet die Welt, ist im Unionsverlag erschienen. Und alles Weitere steht dann auf in diesem Blogbeitrag. Soweit der Krimi-Blog-Podcast für heute. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Morgen bzw. das nächste Krimi-Blog-Podcast beschäftigt sich dann mit einem US-amerikanischen Thriller-Autor, nämlich Jeffrey Deaver. Zum Abschluss gibt es jetzt noch ein bisschen Feng Shui, und zwar von Gnarls Barkley. Tschüss! In this house, the decor is the obvious obscure. It's clearly the theory of less is more. A plant of pet books on a shelf, and a frame on the wall where you can picture yourself. And you're welcome to stay, but even your company must complement the feng shui. Even down to what I have on, made you wonder to what extent I have gone. Tailored the tape and contours of the curve, demanded the attention that it does deserve. Fabrics for the forecast of the day, I admit it, everything is fitted to fall in feng shui. More importantly, the way that I move, if I'm in your town, my needle's down on the groove. On sight, they know my song, and it ain't slow, and it sure ain't long. You see, I do not play. Forgive me, father, I was forced out of feng shui. A flow as subtle as a summer breeze, like the whispering wind, hear the talking trees. Too big to be boxed in, it bobs and weaves. It evolves, it solves, it gives and receives. And everything I say is calculated, appropriated, written, and arranged in feng shui.